You're listening to Stories That Matter, a Hawkwood podcast. In this episode, we hear from artist Sam Lee speaking and singing in our 2021 Climate Action Lab.
Our final session of our three-day Climate Action Lab brings us the wonderful artist Sam Lee. Sam Lee is a dear friend of Hawkwood, and he is a folk singer, song collector, a nature conservationist and presenter. And Sam has spent 15 years re-galvanising the sight, sound and ecosystem of folk arts in the UK through his projects and live shows. With three critically acclaimed albums, his debut receiving a Mercury Music Prize nomination, Sam works holistically in challenging the very nature of our heritage music in the 21st century. Sam has also been an artist in residence at Hawkwood several times and is now running his nature immersion programmes for artists from Hawkwood. And we're very much looking forward to Sam returning to us next April. Sam, welcome. Welcome to our Climate Action Lab.
Alicia, it's so lovely to be here. Thank you very much for having me and for all the speakers beforehand as well. Such a joy to be here. And it's what I'll say is that I'm dipping in quite late. I haven't been able to be part of as much of the lab as I'd like to have done. I've just arrived back down from Glasgow from COP. And I guess really my offering at the moment is being quickly recalibrated by the experiences up there and a time of incredible energetic surge. And it's a festival up there like no other festival. It's a festival with a sense of purpose, and the great privilege has been to be there as part of the many voices of people speaking in respect of their land, in pursuit of equality, and to tell their story and to share their experiences. And the great privilege is that I, as an artist, come from a very similar place about looking at a sense of reawakening of our relationship to the land, and that being one that is being forged in many ways through many different practices, but for me very much through music, and that idea of how we can reconnect to our own soil and create a sense of accountability and love in an artistic as well as a traditional way, how we can use the arts, how we can use our own ancient skills and connections to find a sense of passage and a sense of beholdenness. I'm a singer who sings the British traditional songs from these islands. And my journey to that has come through spending the last 15 years in apprenticeship and in study and documentation of the last of the oral traditions that exist in Great Britain. I've had the great fortune of being out in the field with the Gypsy Traveller community, and the Hawkwood relationship started very much with me going there in residence to start to really dig into the archives of recordings that I've made over those 15 years of the last elders within those communities, of the Irish traveller, the Scottish traveller and the English gypsy community, to dig into the songs and stories and repertoires and reminiscences and yarns and wisdom that have been passed down intergenerationally on these islands, because we have I have experienced an amazing trajectory of deep understanding of this land, of our soil, of our counties and the communities who have been custodians to this land, which is sort of coming to a bit of an end at the moment. We live in this age of extinction, and those voices of those elders, many of whom have now passed away, are really in some ways the last people to be to have been brought up within that journey of song being a form of conversation and a carrying of a wisdom and an insight into the land. So it's been an amazing study for me to be in the presence of those people who have shared their ancient ways. I'm going to sing a song for you. I feel like you've done a lot of listening to talking, and I'd like to sing as much as relate the stories around. And I'm going to start with this song, which is a Northern Irish song, which I feel is a really unique one for speaking about deforestation in Northern Ireland on the account of the British. It's a song that goes back to the 1700s. And it tells of the firsthand experience of the communities in Antrim who witnessed that clear felling of the forest of Bonnyport Moor. And Bonnyport Moor, or Portmoor Forest, had this tree, the ornament tree, who was an ancient oak and much loved and the seat of many stories and wisdoms of that community, in this 1,000-year-old tree that was felled with the entire woods to be taken for that, those oaks and the ash to be taken back to England. And this song is very unique in that although it's an anonymous traditional, we don't know what the source was. There's a verse, it's only a short song, that speaks from the point of view of the birds in the forest to exclaim their heartbreak at the loss of their home. I had the great privilege of singing this for Senator John Kerry a week and a half ago when he was in London, and had a meeting with him and sang this to him as one of the ancient calls that we have to end the environmental destruction on our own home turf. So here is Bonnyport Moor. Oh, Bonnyport Moor, I am sorry for to see the woeful destruction of your ornament tree. You've stood on these shores for many the long day, till the long boat of Antrim came to float you away. Oh, Bonnyport Moor, you shine where you stand, and the more I think on you, the more I think strong. For if I had you now, as I had you before, then the lords of old England could not purchase Portmore. For the birds in the forest so bitterly weep, saying, where can we shelter and where can we sleep? For the oak and the ash, they have all been cut down, and the walls of Bonnyport Moor, they are all fell to the ground. Oh, Bonnyport Moor, I'm sorry for to see the woeful destruction of your ornament tree. That's Bonnie Portmore. There's something very, there's a funny thing to this is that I'm reading the text, the subtitles of what I'm singing, and I'm realizing it's completely misunderstanding my lyrics or the lyrics. And it feels like an amazing metaphor to something that is going on right now, that the idea of the wisdom that we have in this world, the understanding of the stories that we hold in relationship to our environment, this idea that it can be documented and captured digitally and converted, and that's a safe way of things being stored, like this text, is just completely, it's so fallible, that the relationship to nature is about a repetitious, first-hand, ongoing lifetime's work and dedication. And so much of the work that I do have done in digitally documenting the intangible cultural heritage of these islands feels in some ways, you know, it was the last resort that I could do, to spend a small amount of time, you know, maybe only a 3 or 4 visits with some people, with others of my informants, my teachers, it was several years. But this understanding and creating a sense of relationship and accountability and adoration of these these precious things that we have in our environment around us take lifetimes of knowing, of appreciation, and also with them a practice of relationship building that has been so eroded. The work I've done in Hawkwood most recently is about creating nature immersion experiences for artists as a way of revealing, through some of the practices that I've been taught and have been inherited to us through indigenous communities in North and South America and Central America, as well as other places through the First Nations there, some of the skills and skill making that we can, how we can use nature as a playground. It's really, it's so vital that we create an opportunity for artists to have that sense of getting to know, of being acknowledged by nature, and finding nature as a form of playground, of safety, of sanctuary, to as a place to contact and come into contact with the muse. It's something that's been lost out of the arts, I feel, so much within the last decades. And looking at nature as a place of welcome, of a place of great teaching. I, as a child, was very fortunate in growing up in organizations that gave me a sense of confidence and of a place where I could take risk and I could learn through the amazing attentiveness that comes with some of the ancient practices of nature awareness, an understanding of the relationships that are there within the natural world. And nature became a great place of listening, of deep listening, of intuitiveness, of building up my skills, my sensory awarenesses. And these are all things that are vital within the arts, about how we pay deep attention, how we hear the quieter vibrations. And I feel that folk song, which has been the music form that I gravitated towards quite late in my life, I wasn't brought up as a folk singer as such, I was attracted to, because within the songs, within the narratives, speaks of a very heartfelt sense of deep listening, that within the lyrics and certainly within the melodic interpretation of lyric that speaks often about nature of bird lore, bird language, that there was an implicit understanding of the natural order, and that folk songs revealed a massively enriched relationship. And as I learned the songs and I met the people that had carried these songs, I realized that to really understand the songs, you had to understand the environments from which they came, both natural environments as well as social environments as well, and the sort of the sense of adoration and where that came from, and the sense of pain as well of seeing the loss, the disappearance, the severance that we have had in this land, that those nomadic communities of the travelers and the gypsies have experienced over the last three generations of dispossessed. Not that they own the land, because their firm belief was that they were not, they were there, they were borrowing the land, and they were there on behalf of the land, not a sense, there wasn't, it never has been a sense of ownership. That's a very contemporary, modern sort of movement that's happened, an enforced movement to settle those people. So they have much more recent to us a sense of relationship with the land that was about a sovereignty that was not a claim. It was a beholdenness and a duty to look after because of a dependence. And the songs really carry that same sense of appreciation. And the singing of the songs is the act of singing songs like the one I sang, as they would have been done traditionally around campfires on the land, not for an audience, not for money, not as part of an industry and a career as I am sort of enslaved to, but one of a sense of prayer-like devotion. And the British song, the British repertoire, which is enormous. We have one of the British, the Britain has one of the largest vernacular lyrical traditions in the world compared to all other nations. What we have in records of narrative traditions in different tribes and communities around the world. Britain has a vast, vast and varied repertoire, some of which is absolute doggerel and nonsense. Others are, you know, extraordinary works of art. And we are very privileged, yet at the same time, this deep irony that we're also one of the nations that has ignored our own indigenous music. And allowed it to wither so much compared to so many other nations that have really held on. I mean, I think we're second to places like Germany that have completely separated from their national songbook for deeply complex reasons, which I won't go into, but are somewhat obvious. But we have these songs, and they are part of an ancient practice of singing the land up, singing out of the land, the things that for us are so vital and important. And for me, the singing, and particularly doing the work of singing this music back to the land through some of the projects I do, such as the Nature Immersion, but the pilgrimage work I do with the salmon and with the turtle doves, as well as my nightingale work, of singing a lot of the nightingale folk songs, which is a massive repertoire, with nightingales out in their habitat when they're here in springtime singing, is about a sense of rewilding the songs and entering into an ancient international practice of relationship of that song has within a bringing forth a profundity and success and a fruitfulness within the land. There are many nations that have wonderful stories of the rains not existing until the song is sung for them, or the salmon not running until the prayers that have been sung to the river to encourage the salmon up. And when the singing stops, so does those lifelines, so does those life cycles. And I feel that, you know, in many ways, I laugh often because I do this project with the turtle doves in Net Rewilding State. We walk a pilgrimage of 25 miles carrying the folk song of the turtle dove back to the last population of turtle doves left in Sussex. And Neps has an amazing increasing population every year, unlike the rest of the country where we're decline of 96% annually, the first bird we expect to go extinct in this island. And we sing the turtle dove song back to the turtles every year. And I'm convinced that the reason why they're so successful is not because of the Amazing Rewilding Project that Izzy and Charlie Burrell have been doing, but because we're singing their song back to them. And that's what they need to hear for them to survive. So there is an immense power for both, maybe for the land itself to receive our song, and the expression that comes from people when the singing is returned, that activation of the land. But I think also there's an activation that happens in us when these songs, or contemporary songs, not just folk songs, but contemporary songs that come from the heart in terms of and a sense of adoration of the natural world, when they are evoked, the animation that happens in us turns us into more tuned beings, that we are able to be more connected. And singing has been done for thousands of years as a way of us getting into that place of receptivity, of attunement, of vibration, of vitality, where we can receive and go into a place of recognition and understanding and of deep listening with other beings, our brother sister creatures. I'm going to end on a story, and I'm sorry, I'm doing this on my phone because I don't have a computer at the moment, because I'm on the road with my band, as well as being up and down in COP. It's a rare moment in London. So I'm not able to see the comments as I'm saying this, or if there are any questions. But I want to end with a song that has been it's a blessing song, it's a prayer song. And it's a song that comes from an old gypsy singer called Frida Black, who passed away last year, aged 93. She was the last of the gypsy balladeers, the real true song carriers. There are a few gypsy singers still left, some friends of mine who sing a few songs, but none like Frida Black, who sang many hundreds of the ancient ballads. And she had this one called The Moon Shines Bright. And the reason why I want to sing this is firstly because it's a song rich in that sense of the passage that we have in life and how we can be more devoted in our connection to heart. Also that I sang this a couple of nights ago up in Glasgow at a listening session with a group of Indigenous leaders from the Amazon, from the Marshall Islands, from the Maasai, and also from the Canadian Anishinaabe and a Navajo man. And Frida's song came in fragments, incomplete, with the great opportunity just to fill in the bits of her song that were missing with words that for me were very powerful. And some of those words came from a Navajo prayer, a Navajo Zuni prayer that I grew up singing as a child, being woken up to the Arise song. And after I'd sung this song, that Tom Goldtooth, who's a 78-year-old leader of the Navajo, one of the confederacies there, an amazingly powerful man, came up to me and took my arm and said, "Your song, I resonate with your song. I understood your song." And I was quite taken aback because he had no idea. And I told him, "Well, actually, it's funny because some of one of your great prayers, one of your sunrise awakening calling in of life prayers is in that song." And he heard that, even though it was a translation. He said that there is only one song and we are all related. So this song is for all of us, all our relations. The moon shines bright and the stars give a light. In a little while it will be day. The voice of love, it calls upon us all. and bids us awake and pray. Arise, arise, and wake thee, arise, for life she is calling thee. For it might be the mothering of your sweet souls, if you open your eyes and see that the life of a man, it comes with little plan, it flourishes like a flower, as tender in the heart, into which you're born, so cherish your every hour. For our time is not long, time's an old folk song, no longer can we stay. Those that remember say, blessed are you all who make it through this broad, long life and another good year. Blessed are you all who answer to the call, long life and another good year. For the moon shines bright, and the stars will be our height. Life, she is calling thee. Arise, arise, awake thee, arise, and evermore walk. Moon shines bright. Thank you,
Alicia. I'll pass it back over to you.
Yeah, Sam, thank you so much. What a absolutely beautiful way to end 3 days of our Climate Action Lab. Your songs always fill me with so much joy when I hear you sing. So thank you for sharing that with us and all your thoughts. And we're very, very much looking forward to welcoming you back to Hawkwood soon. I know we have a plan on the Nature Immersion returning, but also for you personally to come and create at Hawkwood. You must have some time for yourself too.
I can't wait.
Well, thank you so much. It was stunning, absolutely beautiful.